and see where we are all at. Maybe we can start with Leonardo. I guess you've been working on the
Right.
Ice Cuzzy server.
Right. I spent most of my time there, which is why I couldn't do much queries on the Yahoo Cloud benchmarking. But I finally figured it out. The main problem was that they are not supporting that anymore because it was moved to the mainland, to the main development of the kernel. It is now in the kernel.
Okay, in the 3.0 kernel.
It was moving 2.6 something, and I was trying to compile it and it was not compiling. But now it's there and.
So you don't need the module. It's already in the
It's
kernel.
already in the kernel,
Okay.
as a module.
Oh, as a module. Okay. So you didn't need to add that external module.
It's,
Okay.
it, the implementation that's already in the kernel has already. It already talks to the right API in the kernel. So that, which is why the old version
So were
was
you
not.
able to actually create a network device using that?
No, what I did was I recompiled the kernel, adding some debugging information, and I made some minor changes to the module, like a message, to make sure that I'm loading the one that I just recompiled. And that's what I'm running now. So I have everything that I need to start understanding and making changes in that code.
Well, I guess my question is, were you able to connect to the ICE CSI server, have an actual device, network device that you could talk to, or you haven't gone that far yet?
I don't understand.
See, there are two parts, right? One is the client and one is the server.
Right.
On the client, you mount the, or rather, you connect the network device, or you
Yes.
instantiate the network device,
Yes.
and then you should be able to access the network device.
Yes.
So have you gone through that basic test process
With
already?
the version that I just compiled?
Yeah, so you need an ICE CSI server running as well, and
We have all that configured. We're
so
written
it's
for
all
the
done.
experiments.
Okay.
So we know how to do that.
Okay.
So what I'm looking at is actually to start making changes to the
Okay.
actual module.
Okay.
Please.
Okay. So the module that you have right now already talks to the ICE CSI server and everything, that works.
It's the same module that we're using in the experiments.
Right. Okay. Okay. I just want to make sure that you have covered both ends of the protocol, the client end and the server end, with
I
this new
have all
module.
everything that I need to do
Okay.
that.
All right.
Just
Cool.
that I'm making very slow progress. It takes forever to do anything there. I don't know. I see that he's making so much progress so fast. For me, it takes days to do one thing.
But that's fine. I think this is something new that you're learning. You can certainly ask for Ricardo's input. Maybe he can speed some of the things up for you. So right now, okay, what is the next step that you want to take?
The next step is understanding the protocol and actually making changes. I'm gonna start. I'll do the approach that I want to follow is start making small modifications and see how that.
Is there any documentation or just comments in the code?
There are some. The web page has some very high-level documentation and some diagrams. There's also the whole protocol, but the documentation is very, very detailed. Both. Detail at the high level, not the code. I just have to read the code, understand it, and change it. There's not much more to it.
So Ricardo, remember we talked about last time that our existing numbers are also okay under the assumption that there is NVRAM on the server, right?
What do you mean? I mean, if we had NVRAM on the server, we need to redo them, right?
If we have NVRAM on the server, we could, the same as creating a journal in memory.
But didn't we agree that we're gonna have a journaling on the server side?
Yes,
The
yes.
storage side.
I'm thinking of the backup options in case, what you're doing is not, we cannot complete it by the deadline and not have experiments for the server-side journaling.
But even before we start the implementation of the journaling, we have to make changes to the protocol. That's step one, right?
It is step one, that is true. But I'm saying that in terms of arguing for, right, I know what you're saying. But what I was thinking is that in terms of arguing whether the performance we see is going to be similar to the performance that we'll see if we have a logical disk implementation, right? And that was one of the things we were talking about last time. I know it's not an ideal implementation, and we may probably, you know, get rejected for that. But I'm just wondering if let's say we are not able to actually make this iSCSI server or a logical disk modification of iSCSI server happen in time, should we still send it to FAST and get some feedback, right? And argue that, okay, we are doing something which is not perfect, but it's reasonable and it approximates what you will see if you actually had a logical disk iSCSI server.
How are we going to evaluate it without the iSCSI?
With the regular iSCSI server, right? I mean, without any changes. So it's just not a logical disk implementation. So we do the checkpointing from the SSD cache into the iSCSI server, except that the checkpointing is not atomic. And what we will have to argue is that if this is similar to the performance that you could expect from a logical disk iSCSI server, which uses NVRAM for the journal. Does that make sense? I think this is what, Ricardo, you were suggesting last time.
Yeah.
We already have that in place, right?
We already have it. We already have some of those numbers as well. Okay. So that is sort of the backup option, which is the reason I'm talking about this is because Ricardo earlier mentioned whether we should submit to FAST or not, given whether we are able to make this iSCSI server implementation work or logical disk implementation work. And my sense is that we should still send it out to get some feedback.
The major inconvenience that I see is that everything that I do takes me a lot of time because I have to learn before I do.
Yeah, so one suggestion, for instance, is to, I mean, especially when you're dealing with kernel code, the approach of trying to know everything about, let's say, a certain piece of code before you start making changes or before you try to create a solution is probably not the best idea, right? I'm not saying that you should not know anything about the code that you're changing. You should know what the code that you're changing looks like. But everything else that are not directly related to your change, I would say spend as minimum time trying to understand it as you have to, right? Which is why I'm saying, like, the top-down approach may not be the best approach with this sort of work. It's more of a bottom-up approach. So you want to sort of quickly identify where you want to make the change, see if it works, or see if it achieves the effect that you're looking for. If not, then your understanding of that path was wrong. You might have to slightly change that, right? Rather than going top-down and trying to understand how, for instance, the whole code works, and then understanding the various pieces to identify where you for sure know that, you know, that's what needs to be done. So it's more of a sort of a bottom-up approach that I'm suggesting.
I understand. What I'm saying is that based on the pairs that I have made so far, if I extrapolate that, there's no way I'm going to finish that on time for the summation. It's just too slow. I hope that time goes by and I start increasing the pace, but so far everything takes forever.
Okay. Right, so basically what you're saying is that it's not clear how your progress may change in the future, right?
Right.
But right now it's not very good, right? How the rate of progress is not very good. But it could change. Let's say you have some breakthrough and you suddenly, you know, light bulb goes off and you realize, oh, this is what this code is doing, right? And then things might go much faster. I guess that's really what we are hoping for here. The other suggestion is to somehow have you get Ricardo's input as well in this. He has more experience reading this sort of code than you, right? So I don't know if Ricardo, do you think you can, you know, take a look at what Leonardo is looking at and give him some initial pointers? That might speed things up for him a bit.
Yeah, I can try.
What are you doing right now? Maybe I can help you running some experiments, and that way we don't waste that time. I mean, I do want to do this, but if we are, our objective is to get it done as soon as possible, maybe we should allocate the resources differently. I can run experiments.
Yeah, I guess we could. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we could. Right now, what I was doing is, you know that we have this dependency for at least the old version of journal advice back. We have this dependency between performance and spelling, right?
Yes.
There is some dependency which is not linear, and I was checking what's affecting that. I was checking if it depends on, I don't know, the speed of the workload, how many writes the workload has, the working size of the workload, things like that.
Are you talking about the standard that introduced as a function of the size of the journal?
Yeah, exactly that one, yeah. I was playing with those numbers and trying to understand.
What is the end goal of this line of work?
Let me tell you more. The thing is that we have this figure for performance versus staleness.
Right.
Yeah, X is wrong. X is the X you see right now multiplied by 100.
How do you quantify staleness?
Okay, let me answer that question.
I thought it wrong, but if you see the figure now, just multiply x by 100, and that's the real number.
Oh, hold on, let me pull up the paper. What's this called? Starting right. Which figure number is this?
The thing is that before we thought, let me tell you. Let me open the paper.
Oh, figure 10. Is this, okay, as you're changing the cache size.
Figure.
This is cache size and throughput, not
stealing. No, it's figure 13.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, you see that, for example, a good after, let's say, 4,000 pages, performance starts to be okay, right?
Yeah.
It's not really 4,000. It's 4,000 times 100.
400,000 pages?
Yes.
So that's one...
That's almost 1 gigabyte.
Yeah.
That's too much. And I saw that playing with some things of the workload, for example, right now there is a ratio of 3 to 2 writes versus reads.
Mm-hmm.
If I change that ratio, this value for staleness changes as well. So I was trying to have a more convenient number or see what's going on there.
Uh-huh. I see.
Because you see that saying that to have decent performance, you need a journal of almost half of the cache. It's too much.
1 gigabyte would not be half of the cache.
In this case, cache is 2.1 gigabytes.
What you call the insertion here is the addition of one page, right?
Yeah.
What if you increase the size of the cache? What would happen?
That's the next thing I wanted to do. Yeah, I hope these numbers will stay constant. I mean, this line will stay pretty much the same.
I think it would, right?
I think it depends on the rate of writes. If that is the case, that's good. I just increase the workload size, and 1 gigabyte will look decent compared to the table, 20 gigabytes, right? That's the next thing I wanted to do.
Yeah, I think that makes more sense, because figuring out what's going on in terms of the behavior and why it's not as high as 1 gigabyte, I think it's probably going to take more time than to just scale up the experiment so that, you know, whatever cache you require is a reasonable fraction of the total working set.
And what's your intuition for saying that if I increase the size of the workload, these values will stay pretty much the same?
No, increase the size of the cache.
I mean the cache, yeah. But I can increase the size of the cache and also the size of the workload, right?
So the write-through safe will probably stay at the same place, maybe if it's a write-intensive workload. The write-back would probably become even better, right? Because write-back is sensitive to the size of the cache.
Yes.
If you have a larger cache, write-back starts performing better. With the write-back, with the control staleness, because I think this is my intuition, that because your staleness or the amount of staleness you can tolerate is lesser than the size of the cache, and this is a write-intensive workload, then the staleness is the one that will determine the performance of the workload than the size of the cache. Because the staleness will determine when things get evicted and would influence the performance more than the size of the cache in case of a write-intensive workload.
Okay.
That's my intuition. But I agree that the write-back line will also go up. And the higher point of this journal write-back would have to match with the other write-back line, the new write-back line. But I feel that this line is not going to move as much as you think when you increase the size of the cache. It might move a little bit, but it won't move too much.
Okay, I hope, yeah. That's one thing. The other thing I was playing with is that you know that for the journal write back, you have one process in the background that's washing, right?
Checkpointing, yeah.
That's cleaning things up.
You mean checkpointing?
Yeah, that would be the word, checkpointing, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, actually I should be using the same terminology as in the paper. Yes, checkpointing. It runs every amount of period, and it flushes in blocks, right? In chunks.
Okay.
It's more efficient to read a big amount of pages from SSD and then write that big amount of pages at once to the disk, right?
But it is doing one transaction at a time, or no?
It's one transaction at a time, but one transaction is very big. Right?
Okay.
So I was playing with that number. What's the chunk size? I left it at 64. 64 seems like a good number for my tests.
Do you want to make that ideally a multiple of the size of the erase block?
Because it's a read operation, so I don't think it matters. It's a read operation.
But you could have an SSD on the other side too.
You could have an SSD on the other side. It's true.
Yes. But in that case, yes.
Yeah. If you have your journal on the server side in an SSD, then it would probably make sense.
Yeah.
Or multiple.
Yeah, that's the other thing I was playing around. So that's basically what I was doing.
So you mean control the size of the transaction?
Yeah. Also.
Right. So the size of the transaction is different than the amount of staleness, right?
Yeah.
And they both affect different things. The size of the transaction affects how much data loss you can have in case the SSD is accessible after a crash. Right? So you can replay the...
No. This is actually different than the size of the transaction. It's how to checkpoint the transaction.
Okay.
You can do it, let's say you have 40,000 pages, you can do it at once. You read 40,000 pages, put them in memory, and write 40,000 pages. There you're wasting a lot of memory for buffering.
Yeah.
But you are increasing parallelism.
Right.
So I was playing with that number, just that.
Okay. But what I'm saying is that if that is a single transaction, and it doesn't have to be, it could be multiple transactions, right? You could say create a meta transaction for the iSCSI server. The transactions on the size of the transactions on the host side SSD could be different than the size of the transactions that are sent to the iSCSI server.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I'm not saying that that's what you should be doing right now, but I'm saying that is another optimization because that will allow for further coalescing.
Yes. We could do that, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, that's an optimization for later. But all I'm trying to say is that these, the two different parameters, which is the size of the transaction in the host side cache and the amount of staleness in the host side cache, they affect or they become important under different failure modes.
Okay.
Right? The amount of staleness in the host side cache becomes important when the entire host fails, including the SSD, because that would be the amount of staleness you would have in the network storage. Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But if the host does not fail entirely, but let's say the hypervisor crashes and you can restart the guest on the same host, you can still reuse the transactions that are available on the SSD, right? And that would lead to lower staleness. So the amount of staleness in that case would just be in the worst case would be the size of a single transaction because all the other transactions are still available in the host side SSD.
Yeah.
So yeah. Given this, we are controlling two different knobs. One is the size of a transaction. The other is the total amount of staleness in the host side SSD to create different staleness values at the server under different failure modes, under two different failure modes. So it is important.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that it is important to have both of these knobs. Right. Right now we have only one.
Yeah.
Okay, because we have only one transaction or maybe two.
Yeah.
Do you have two? So you
no,
have
just one.
Just one. So your writes block for checkpointing then?
Right now they're blocking, yeah.
Oh. Okay.
But it's writes to the blocks that are being checkpointed.
Writes to the blocks that are checkpointed. So which means that you can create a new transaction while a current transaction has not been checkpointed.
In this code, no.
Okay. So in your current code, you cannot write to the SSD at all when there is a checkpointing going on.
Well, other blocks can.
Now I'm confused. So you can create two transactions as long as the transactions don't overlap in content. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, they can overlap, but the blocks that are being checkpointed have to wait.
Correct. So all the blocks in the previous transaction
are locked.
If you write to them, you have to wait.
Yes.
You have to wait. And it is likely that you will rewrite this some of the blocks in the next transaction, right? So you're basically blocking the guest at that point, or the process.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
There will be some write locality. So it would be good to understand how much blocking this design introduces.
Yeah. Maybe that's I don't know how much performance overhead we have because of that. That's true. Maybe it's huge. I don't know.
Right. So you do have the ability to create two transactions as long as the contents don't overlap.
Yeah. So, in some sense, yes.
Interesting. Well, if that is true, then why not allow the contents to overlap? Because your map is not able to have two locations for the same block.
Pretty much. That and some other changes, but basically that.
I see. Okay. Okay. All right. So, in terms of next steps, where are we? So Ricardo, I think that it might be a good idea for you to help Leonardo with reading the iStudy code.
Okay.
So you can get him started, or if you figure something out and you realize that it's actually straightforward enough that Leonardo can take over, I think that might be ideal, because then you can run your own experiments. You know your system the best. If something doesn't work as expected, you would know right away, and you can change things and keep going, right? But I think that it would also make sense for you to spend maybe the next few days to try to get Leonardo started. And in the meanwhile, maybe you can focus on the YCSB benchmark and getting that to work. Because I think if you take over from Ricardo in his experiments, and given that there are all these complications when he runs these experiments, even that might require a significant learning curve. And you would need Ricardo's time anyway, because he needs to tell you all of that. Right? I don't know. This is just my thought, and I may be wrong. What do you think, Ricardo?
I don't know.
Do you think it's better if Leonardo takes over experimentation from you entirely, and while you focus on the iSCSI server, or what I said earlier?
The thing is that I would like him to help me on the stuff I'm doing now, but on the other hand, if we don't have that second experiment, you know, the Facebook crisis thing,
we
are not going to make it. Because for now, we just have Postman.
True. Okay, so here's what I suggest then. Ricardo, maybe you can spend at least next 2-3 days looking at the iSCSI code that Leonardo has been looking at. It's actually, once we figure out where, it would be a simple change, I'm hoping, right? Because you have to just insert some marker in when you send out the first request of an atomic transaction, and then a similar marker to denote the end of the transaction when you send the last request, right? The question is, and on the other side, you have to, you know, then figure out what to do with it, right? How to implement that atomically.
Right. The packets, they come out of order.
The packets could come out of order. Oh, okay. So which means that you also need sequence numbers.
The protocol has sequence numbers, but the packets, they say that they could come out of order.
Okay.
So in the order in which we bid your chunks, or whatever you call that, may be different in the order that you were receiving it in different order.
I think that's fine, as long as we know the sequence number and we know that something is missing in between. Then before we commit the transaction on the server side, we wait for all the guys to show up, and then we commit the transaction. Because these are all sequenced, right?
That will increase your challenge, right?
Now
you have to wait until the package comes so you can write it in the router.
you don't write in the right order, but you commit the entire transaction. You cannot start checkpointing the transaction until you commit the transaction. And you cannot commit the transaction until you have all the different blocks in the transaction.
Hey, Leonardo?
Yes.
From what I understand, for the ISSC server, you have the user-level component is some kind of, it's just control, right?
Yes.
It's just for administration.
Yes.
But actual data goes at kernel level, right?
Yes.
They don't go to user level at all. Right?
That's what I think, yes.
So we need some way of, at the user level, you know, these control levels, insert some kind of indirection for the journal and somehow trying to minimize the changes on the kernel level.
So push the work to user level, you're saying?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Let's see, but we need to... I mean, the tricky thing now is it's not actually doing. I guess it's finding the easiest way of doing it.
Are there any alternative user-level iSCSI server implementations that are already doing everything at the user level? Might be much easier to work with those. Have you seen any in your study?
The ones that I've seen are more complicated than this one.
But they are at the user level.
They all have components at kernel and user level.
Okay. So yeah, I guess we could do what Ricardo is suggesting, is to push the journaling and the functionality to user space. It's not the most efficient implementation, but
I guess there has to be some mapping, right? There has to be some virtual disk to physical disk mapping somewhere.
Yeah.
We just need to play with that mapping and leave everything else the way it is.
Yeah.
We need to find that mapping and just find a way of playing with it from user space, and I guess that's it.
There may be no mapping, actually. The whatever is a network device could be a similar, it could be a device as is on the server.
Yeah, I see. But it can provide some form of run, right? It should.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, in today's world, all the iSCSI servers are more complicated. So, yeah, I don't quite know. In my simplistic view, it was just the same network device becomes an actual device on the server side. But you're right, it may be more complicated than that. So if you want to, let's say, create a journal and assume an NVRAM-based journal, we would have to create an in-memory journal inside the kernel, which is probably okay, right? So, and that would need to be checkpointed atomically. So as packets keep coming in, we put it in memory, wait until we get the last packet, commit the transaction, and only then can we checkpoint it.
It's okay if we have the journal on the device also.
Yeah, it's okay if we have the journal on the device also, but keeping it in memory would be easier, I thought.
Oh, yeah, but if we have this mapping, let's say we just, you know, indirect the future, let's say, 10 writes to, let's say, we inject all the next writes into some portion of the device, the journal, just by playing with this mapping. Then we have the end of transaction command. You stop doing this mapping, and before you process any further request, you just copy things and then they run.
That is more complicated than just having the request sit in memory for a while before you write it to the device, the final destination.
No, because I was saying, I mean, if you had access to this mapping, you just changing the mapping, right? You don't have to allocate buffers, pages, anything. You're just changing the mapping.
Yep. Well, all I'm saying is that you don't even need to change the mapping, right? You just say, okay, I'm going to buffer these requests in memory until I have the entire transaction, have an in-memory journal, mark the end of transaction for the in-memory journal, and then allow the IOs to proceed as they would before.
What happened with reads? Reads are not performed from the journal, right?
Or no,
reads might. Reads would be performed from the journal.
Journal always have the most up-to-date cover.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, hold on.
But the transaction is not committed yet.
Transaction is not committed yet, so I don't know what are the read semantics. I have to think about this some more, but I'm sure the logical disk paper already has a concrete suggestion there.
I guess they have to wait.
Reads have to wait. Or reads access the previous version. Right? Reads could also access the previously committed version of the same block.
I don't know.
That's a different kind of semantics, because and it's still valid because the current write has not been committed, and when I'm reading, I don't want to block. I read the previous value. So all
of if you turn that into caching, caches may have data that's not already flushed, but you still read from the cache as well, right?
That's true. So you're right. Yeah. You're right. Yes. So, yeah, in our case, I think the right thing to do would be to read from memory, the latest version, the memory journal. We would have to create an extra mapping from a device block IO request, a network device block IO request to a memory location, or maybe we just need to create a new data structure where we'll store all of these requests temporarily.
From LBH to wherever you have a memory.
Yeah, basically just maybe have a linked list of requests that are coming in for the network device, right? And start this list when you get a begin atomic write, and end this list when you get an end atomic write. Once you have both and you have everything in between, then you issue all the IO requests in parallel. Issue all of these IOs in parallel, right? And all you need to ensure is that you complete all of these requests before you start the next batch. So the optimization that I see here is that, let's say, the previous batch completed and you have more requests coming in. Actually, no, that's not, you can't do that. You have to wait for the entire group to be received and stored in memory before you can start writing any of them.
Because they may never arrive.
Because they may not arrive, the host may crash, and you've already messed up the storage here. Yeah. Right. So you have to wait for everything to show up before you start sending anything to the server disk. The storage location. And I think it's very straightforward. I think this is simpler than writing to a device and then writing to a device again in the final location. It's just an in-memory journal. And we can also always argue that in-memory journaling is fine because these NVRAMs, these storage servers have NVRAMs, which are protected.
So what will be our star, our command, as Cosy command say, star and end will be whenever the file system issues a barrier?
No. The start and end would be decided by the checkpointing mechanism that Ricardo was talking about earlier, one that runs periodically. Because that's the guy who reads entire transactions from the SSD cache and sends it to the server. Right, Ricardo?
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense.
It's not related to the, there's nothing, no interaction with the file system. Although...
No. Although, we're including implementer of the file system, but...
Right.
No.
By the way, Ricardo, do you know Swami from Ramsey's group?
Yeah. We met in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah. We met them, and now he works at Fusion.io.
Okay.
And Leonardo was working with him this summer.
Oh.
They were at FIU, both Swami and Nisha, who is Swami's boss. They were here.
I saw the mail. Yeah.
Right.
How was it?
So it was very good. I really enjoyed the talk. But more relevant to the current discussion is that I told them about this project that we are doing, and they were very excited about it, and they wanted to collaborate with us on this project.
Okay.
Because they said that they are thinking about similar questions at Fusion.io. And we've already made substantial progress, and it would be, I think, good to have them also part of the project, because they have lots of interesting applications and input, and of course a lot of experience working with Flash.
Not to mention they already have a caching solution.
They already have a caching solution. They could probably use what we are building here right away.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, not right away, but whenever we can get it all to work, and so they are very interested, in other words. And I think it's good, it's a good opportunity for us also to get some good feedback and collaborate with them. So what I have told Swami and Nisha is that once we have something readable, we'll send over a draft to them, right? And my goal is to make this current draft as much as we can, complete with respect to the current content, because I think there's still a lot of... for instance, figures that are not complete or not completely explained, and then there are figures that are not explained at all. We need to take care of that by the end of this week. So I'll be spending some time doing all the, or tying all the loose ends, and I might ask Ricardo to give me some more details if I'm not finding something. But the short story is that they are very interested, and I'm going to send them a draft and get their feedback.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah.
So Leonardo, I mean, in terms of the iSCSI implementation, I don't know what you think about Ricardo spending, let's say, 2 or 3 days looking at what exists. And I think the memory journaling is probably the fastest one. Ricardo, I don't know why you feel that writing to disk would be a simpler implementation of the journal. I think writing to memory journal is much, much easier. Because it's just a linked list of structures.
In terms of this playing of the mapping, and I was seeing that just as a simple, just a level change.
We're making too many assumptions of how the code works.
Hmm.
It's better to just look at it and understand.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay. So let's have Leonardo work on the YCSB benchmark. I think that's really important. And Ricardo, maybe you can spend the next couple of days on the iSCSI code and see whether you can get Leonardo started on it. And maybe you can tell him what you learned so that he can move faster. And then you can go back to your experiments.
Okay.
The way you find that is that you can get, there's a package in Ubuntu called OpenISCSI. If you do apt get source OpenAI scopes is going to download the source code for both the application and the kernel modules.
Okay, let me do that right now.
So can you guys do this offline, because I need to get ready for the class. We have a class at about, we have also had to be there, but then we have about 25 minutes. I need to do a little bit of preparation before I go.
Okay, so...
But let me ask you,
I'm getting it.
Does this plan look sound good?
I think it makes sense.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to hang up the Skype call then. We can meet again. I'll set it up over email. And Leonardo, you can connect to Ricardo via Skype.
I'm going to be in Skype as soon as I get downstairs.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Ricardo.
Bye.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. It's fine.